At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Get excited. Your ears are not lying to you. You are listening to a new episode of the Negro Drop Podcast with your host, as always, Gerard Fortune, that guy, that host. My voice sounds a little bit deeper, sounds maybe a little crocodile-ish. And I'm talking to the crocodile from the Four Kids One Piece, that one. He had a very gloomy from the back of the throat, like he was like constantly congested, but he was a grown man. Yes, I have that voice because I was not fighting COVID. I was just fighting a regular flu. It's the beginning of that season, and it sucks because I'm always wearing a mask, and I don't really go outside anymore. So it was one of those colds where you just pissed off. You're like, I didn't even touch anybody. The hell, man. But anyway. Before I get carried away, guys, of course, we got some catching up to do. For those of you that are there, because the listener count did drop off this year with the changes to everything going over here with Negro Jump. But I am joined by very, very special guest, which pulled me out of hiatus. I got Mr. What are your titles, sir? What are you reigning titles? You reign in South Carolina. You won championships.
From the rogue heathen, the deranged behemoth.
Ooh.
From the realm of Midgard, specifically the Carolina of the South, Ryan Mantis.
One and only, ladies and gentlemen. One and only. Now. I'm pretty sure the listeners are wondering who is this person with his own AKAs. This is the first time for Negro Jump. Ryan Mantis is a professional wrestler, ladies and gentlemen. What level of circuit would you say?
Your standard independent circuit, your standard independent wrestler, just traveling wherever anybody'll see him.
Gotcha. Completely independent, show up, ready to wrestle. Now, I brought you on because wrestling has re-entered my life. Hard. Now, it started last year with working on a side project with a comedian called Put 'Em Through the Table. Essentially, that was the name of a podcast, but once I slowly started understanding how the podcast game has changed, and I can't just jump into it like I did with this podcast, we got to build hype around it to get listeners, because there's a podcast every day. You see a new podcast. You see about two or three new ones. So from there, I ended up re-entering the realm of wrestling. And slowly wrestling was just creeping back onto my timeline. And that's when Mr. Ryan Mantis here, who I know as Spencer, has had a run the last 2 years in his professional career. Wrestling. It's one thing to be on Facebook one day and you see a friend get a job on SNL, right? It's another thing you be on Facebook and you see your friend holding up tag team championship belts in the ring, and it's not Halloween. It's springtime.
They know cosplay.
He's for real with it. And now I'm getting caught up on everything that Ryan's been up to, which he's definitely been a very, very busy guy. But But just to, again, to give some a little further background between me and Ryan. We both grew up in the small town of Camden, North Carolina. You left way before me. You left way before me. I think like what, right before high school.
It was actually it was about the middle school. I think it was like sixth grade. That was the last time I was there.
So soon as you got to sixth grade, and I met you, I think, while you were in the fifth grade. Like I finally.
It was something like that. We lived on same street, just about a few hundred yards away. And I think it was just shortly after y'all moved in, just happened to be outside one day. Of course, you know how it is back in when you're a kid. Like, oh look, it's another young person. That's my friend. There you go.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Hung out, messed around, and we loved wrestling together growing up. We talked about it all the time.
Man, like, and this is something I had to learn as co-hosting. On a wrestling project, I had no idea what I was watching. So as I was talking to you about wrestling, like we connected on wrestling as kids, I'm still taking it as the green face. This is a show. Right now,
yeah.
But I gotta apologize to listeners. Where it's like I'm not in a dangerous zone. I'm just in a very active street. So this siren's always going on of all kinds. Could just be paramedics. It could be the fire department just checking a fire alarm at an apartment building, and like that's it. Nothing to really be concerned about. But it is in a local space all the way up here in Jersey. That's where my talents has brought me up to. But growing up in Camden, specifically that town, the amount of people that you ran into, especially like once you went to the school. And you got to see how diverse the people were from where they came from. Some people from Virginia, some people, a lot of military, a low-key military town with people from all over. But the wrestling was a connecting point, but I was so surface level then. So surface level on it, whatever was on SmackDown, that's what I watched. Versus you, who was definitely studying the moves. At that time, definitely studying the moves because I remember thinking like, all right, like I high key want to play games right now, but he really trying to wrestle. So like, I got to figure out it was really putting on a wrestling match for real. It was just like, I got to sell it. I got to put him over. I got to figure out how do I fully commit to this when I don't know how this actually works.
And that's completely understandable. Like once you cross that threshold from just fanaticism into learning about, you know, the behind the scenes and what it all entails, it is unfathomably eye opening. The things you learn, the things that, you know, you didn't even notice before. There's things that are going on in that ring, especially when you're watching like on television, AEW, WWE, even myself as an indie guy, there's things happening on television that I still don't understand because it's all little tricks, little nuances that make wrestling. It really, really is. That's one of the reasons why you can have matches where guys are doing some of the biggest, craziest acrobatic moves you've ever seen, which is nice. But the best kind is the ones where you have people in that ring that are hell-bent on telling a story that and making the guy across from them look like $1 million. Whenever you get in that ring, your goal is to, both guys are trying to make the other look as good as humanly possible. That's when you have the best matches and the most iconic stories that, you know, have ever been told. That's where all that comes from. Oh, hold up. Hold on one second, sir. I think we might have lost audio. Yep, it appears we did. Can you say something for me? Nope, it went off. All right, can I back out and come back in? All right, let's try that. Okay, I'm back. How we now? Damn it, I still can't hear you. Shit.
You hear me now, right?
Yes, now I can hear
okay.
you.
Okay, okay, okay. My fault.
No, we're good. Okay, so anyway, that was the last thing I said was about, you know, the storytelling of wrestling. I'm sorry, where did I cut you off?
I definitely forgot. So let's just get into talking about performing. I was about to start ranting again. That's why I was like, we could just skip it. I was about to start rambling again. But no, it's I was going to speak on because it's I'm in that change and that kind of like change of point in my career, were like, not as in like the whole career is changing, but like I gotta make a change, a shift, and like I've already changed how I'm approaching it and like my plan for what I would like to do with stand-up comedy, since like I only want to focus on just that thing. Everything else was just extra, which it also gets in the way, but it's like, all right, bet. If I'm gonna do it like this, but this is how I feel about it, then we're gonna have to perform a different way. And now understanding that how the wrestler performs, or like knowing that people went through several like gimmick character like persona changes in their career. So, like, remembering that, so now it's, like, I got something else to be inspired by. Because I used to solely, rely on everyday life and watching stand-up comedy to, like, learn from it and get like, more and more experience. But, like, it's been 8 years straight of just straight that and not adding on to it. And reintroducing wrestling into my life, it's giving me that like new perspective to where now, since that's what's to be understood when you're watching this, that it's entertainment and they are performing with their bodies. But it was simply put by comedian Patrice O'Neill that wrestlers are stuntmen who can act.
Essentially that actually... That's one of the first things that I ever heard when I first came in to start my first training session. The guy who, so I started in 2013. I was 21 in college down here at USC Upstate. That's why I went to school at. So loved wrestling my entire life. As you know, you remember when we grew up, I was always into it, always loving it. But here was the irony. My parents did not like wrestling. They did not want me to watch it. They were like, No, they didn't. It was that late 90s, early 2000s epidemic of like, oh no, wrestling's like, you know, messing up our kids' minds and it's poisoning them. It turns out they were right, but nevertheless. So which they wouldn't let me watch it, but they would buy me all the video games. How does that make any sense? Like that, because that's what I did. Growing up, I didn't get to watch it as much. I studied the video games and I learned about all the characters through that. And then, you know, as I got older, slowly but surely, you know, mom and dad can't do much to stop me from turning on the USA channel and watching an episode of Raw. That it just kind of stuck. And not only that, we were at a time where being a wrestling fan wasn't exactly all that popular anymore. You got kind of made fun of if you still watch wrestling. I mean, back in the early 90s with Sting, the NWO, Stone Cold, it was huge. But then after that was when it kind of started, it wasn't quite as up there as it once was. So I always felt like wrestling was something that was exclusive to me and a select few other people, such as yourself and a few other friends I had that also liked it. So for years and years, I loved it, watched it from afar, didn't even know indie wrestling was a thing, had no idea it was even a possibility. And then sitting in my dorm room, watching a Netflix documentary about WCW, and they mentioned how NWA, guys like Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes, would come through Spartanburg, where I live, Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. My ADHD brain Googles Pro Wrestling Spartanburg. And what pops up is this little place called American Pro Wrestling. And I was like, and it said, for $25 a week, we'll train you to be a wrestler. And I'm sitting there going, what? And I, out of nowhere, I picked up my phone. I had the same look on my face the whole time, just like was so in disbelief. I pick up the phone, I call, and I get this guy said, "This here's Jared Brad, brother. What can I do for you?" Said, "I saw an ad that you'll train people for $25 a week to be wrestlers."
Wow.
"Yeah, Bubba, come on down here, sign some paperwork. We'll get you in the ring, Bubba." I took one step in that building. I took one look at that ring, and all bets were off. It was, as soon as I touched the canvas, I knew that it was just something I had to have. It was something I wanted. You know, nothing else in life has motivated me that hard other than my wife. Nothing else has given me that level of like drive and discipline and motivation until I found the wrestling business. After that, I started eating right. I started exercising. I started taking just a little bit of everything in life more seriously because I had something that truly mattered just to me. Nobody else like gave it to me. Nobody brought me in. Nobody pushed me to do it. It was all my decision. And that's something that I've never really had in life. And 13 years later, it's still such a huge foundation to everything I do.
Hell yeah, man. That's how you hear it starts, those real passions.
It's kind of hard to explain. I never had that feeling, that real like unholy drive of just nothing's going to stop me from chasing this. And once I found it, it just changed the way I looked at everything.
Nice.
All of life.
Nice. Yeah. Hell yeah, man. That's great to hear. So let's get into the fandom. Let's get into the fandom of wrestling. What were your favorite games? Since that's where it started with you on getting the lore. What were your favorite wrestling games? What were your favorite wrestling games?
The best wrestling game that I... Okay, the first one I ever played was WCW Nitro from like 95, 96. It was a PlayStation 1 game. Very, very basic, very standard. Like, the thing I loved most about that was you could scan over the main menu and hit the circle button and listen to a rant from every wrestler. Which was some of the goofiest shit that I'd ever freaking heard, but it was so entertaining. And while that was great, and then the biggest game that I think I just played for hours and hours. Actually, there were three of them. SmackDown, Shut Your Mouth. SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain, and SmackDown versus Raw. Every single one of those games had like, I mean, for one, the first one, you could genuinely like go to the boiler room of an arena, Irish whip a guy into a boiler and send him flying 100 feet and take a bump that would easily kill him. Like, it's like, oh, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Not to mention, and Here Comes the Pain, you could freaking go in Times Square and have a guy take you up in a helicopter into a Swanton bomb into the middle of Times Square. Like, if that's not some, like, I can only see New Jack from ECW doing that, but I mean.
R.I.P.
Yes, one of the greatest. I miss that SOB so much. I'd let him stab me. I'd let him stab me.
Okay.
I'd be there in the ring with him.
So is it safe to say that you're a ECW guy?
I was a big ECW fan. I hate to sound like a pompous ass here, but I consider myself a student of the entire wrestling industry. I truly love everything that wrestling has to offer. There's so many various types, various styles, various kinds of shows. There's a lot of people out there who are not a fan of the hardcore, ultra-violent deathmatch type of stuff. And that's understandable. It's a type of wrestling that isn't for everybody. But for me, it's a guilty pleasure. It's hardcore wrestling is something I've loved since the beginning. The guy that I know you were a big fan, I think everybody from our generation was a huge fan of, Jeff Hardy. One of the best, craziest, one of the most extreme guys of all time. Yes. Yes, I was literally a Hardys fan before I was a wrestling fan. I turned on Sunday Night Heat, and Jeff Hardy comes out. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? With the black light paint on his face, he comes in, does all that crazy shit. I was like, whoa! Mm-hmm. So the first time I touched the game, that was the first name I looked for. And that's ultimately who I kind of wanted to be deep down. Going back to ECW, I think that's being a fan of guys like Jeff Hardy laid that foundation for me. And when I watched places like ECW, guys like Rob Van Dam, Sabu, Tommy Dreamer, Balls Mahoney, all these guys, it was so different. It was storytelling, but on a whole different level. And there's a lot of people who say that, you know, oh, that crazy violent stuff, that's not real wrestling. That's not, that isn't, you know, the classic formal way to do it. That's not real art. And I could not disagree more. I think it is a fabulous form of art. It is a extreme form of art that may not be akin to everybody, but ECW undoubtedly produced an entire generation of different kinds of wrestling fans. It found a market, and it absolutely capitalized on it better than anybody in the history of the industry. And ironically, ECW collapsed under the weight of its own success. What kind of mindfuck is that? These guys, they were so successful and so in demand, they couldn't meet the demand that they had because of legal complications and superstar injuries. So, yes, I am a big lover of the phenomena that was ECW and the man himself, Paul Heyman.
That sounds like a terrific problem to have. It's like, damn, all of my stars are hurt. The show can't go on.
They ran into I actually did a final paper my senior year of high school for PE class. What fucking PE class has you do a final paper? Yeah, I know. It's crazy. But nevertheless, they said pick a sport of your choosing and write a 5-page paper about it. I chose wrestling, but they said, well, it can't just be wrestling. You got to pick a promotion. My best friend chose WWE. I chose ECW. And upon doing all that research, it turns out that company could have been saved, could have succeeded, if it was not for the injury of Rob Van Dam. And that kind of thing, it's amazing how life plays out. That is an example of how strangely in this business, things can rise and fall in the blink of an eye. Never when you expect it.
Now, I see it now in real time, like, I don't have to look far if I'm questioning why a wrestler hasn't been seen on Raw or SmackDown. It's like, oh, they actually broke their finger on this spot at this pay-per-view like 2 weeks ago. So they want them to chill before they go out there and then can't move their finger anymore. So it's a it's so interesting what it's evolved into.
Oh yeah.
It's so interesting what it's evolved. How big it's gotten again. I'll say that. I'll make a point to say that. How big it has gotten again. The world yes. The world of professional wrestling, the entertainment side of it, like, is they go about it a completely different way now.
Especially with Vince McMahon out of the picture, when Triple H took over WWE, it was a massive game changer. And I'm not, for the record, I do not have any, I have no connections with WWE directly. I have met with and talked to assistant producer Gabe Sapolsky, who handles things like extras and bringing in independent talent. A great guy. He's looked at me. He's said he likes, you know, what I do, but, you know, never been called in for an extra spot, which is perfect fine. But what I'm getting at is, with the little bit of knowledge I do have, I've always speculated that once Triple H took over the WWE, there was going to be a lot more independent collaboration. And there has. It's incredible. As soon as he took over, they hit the ground running, getting independent promotions involved and getting younger new talent looked at. But ironically, the thing that I told other guys is, it's good, but it's also bad. I mean, because think about it. With the expansion in media, social media, and the eyes that are now on independent wrestling, the market is unbelievably saturated. There are people everywhere who are trying to earn a spot. There are so many people getting involved in the wrestling business. It used to be a lot more difficult. Had to know somebody, find somebody, and then come up. It wasn't easy to find somebody who was involved in indie wrestling. Now it's not very hard to find training schools, to find places to learn from. But the key is, now you have to work that much harder at standing out, at being a good quality superstar. And
yes, sir.
I will say that I think for me personally, the Fed is not as much my goal as it once was. I love WWE, always have. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like if I got a call in the next 5 minutes that I wouldn't be packing my shit and going to Florida. But at the end of the day, not quite the same company it used to be either. What we fell in love with as kids is not the same thing. The way they operate, the way they handle things, it's way faster, way more go-go, way more demanding. And so my goal is to work and get as far as I possibly can. If I, you know, get bookings with some big indie companies in the country, I'm happy. I'm thrilled. Getting the chance to see other young guys really who don't have quite as much in life, really pursuing it and chasing it, giving their all. I've had the privilege of working with Javon Evans.
Nice.
When he was in the Indies, I worked with him a few times.
Nice.
Out with him, and now seeing where he's at, it's amazing, and I'm thrilled to see it. And just being able to say, man, I got to work with that guy. I got to, you know, share some locker rooms with him. It's an incredible feeling, and it's, you know, and I'm very grateful for it.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. It definitely is a lot of talent, especially with the production that is NXT happening. I've yet to dip my toe into that, but every time I see it, I'm like, y'all have your own thing going on right now. Completely separate from everybody else's shit.
It absolutely is.
They got their own shit going on. I knew to take NXT serious when shout out to Lawrence. Lawrence was the host of the Put Him Through the Table podcast. He told me, he was like, have you heard of Sol Ruka? I was like, who? He was like, look her up right now. He was like, look her up. We're recording. He was like, look it up right now. He was like, craziest finisher I ever seen. I was like, holy shit. I was like, wow. You weren't lying. I'm like, is she not in WWE right now? They're just like, nah, it's development. I'm like, it makes sense. And I see it now because ever since I saw that first clip last year, all the way up until now, throughout that whole process, pretty much a whole year of me becoming a fan of Sol Ruka, I was like, as soon as I saw her do the Soul Snatcher, I'm like, if she could figure out how to hit that safely, and how she can hit it safely and still sell it, because it is a pretty difficult move to sell.
Yes.
But it's just overall, it's just like, if she can, because it's like, I want you to keep doing it every single night, but that move is crazy as a signature finisher. But I'm like, if she can figure out how to hit it at any point in the ring, I'm like, it's a wrap. It's over. And this whole year, that's all she's been doing. Like, because before it was always set it up in the corner. It was always set it up in the corner. Are you good?
Oh yeah, one of my colleagues was walking by like, "Hey, Mr. Mantis," I'm like, "I'll come get you, you motherfucker."
Got you. Okay. I was like, I don't want to distract you. Get snatched out of here.
The heavyweight champ was debating on jumping me.
Got you. In the middle of a press.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah. But yeah, I was like, if Sol Ruka could figure out how to hit the Soul Snatcher at any point in the ring, it's a wrap. It's the GOAT right there.
Yeah,
but
and you're absolutely right. You know,
go ahead, my fault.
No, I'm sorry. I was gonna say what you were saying earlier about her, about safety. That you are dead on the money because I've been to a few seminars with people who guys like I said, Gabe Sapolsky and a few other guys who've been at the WWE level. Santino Marella, I did one with him recently. Damian Sandow. These guys, what they did teach me was they said, listen, if you ever get a chance to get looked at, scouted by WWE, they want to know that they can trust you to hit all the basics cleanly, safely, and smoothly, and they're not gonna have to worry about you hurting yourself or fucking somebody else up. They don't care if you can get in there and do the fanciest, coolest moves. I mean, that's all well and good, but they want to see, like, can we be sure this person can put on a great show, do everything clean, and if we put him in there with our multi-million-dollar guy, they're not going to fuck him up. Because if you go in, if they give you a chance to, you know, wrestle against Braun Breaker, they give you a chance to do a little spot, you fuck it up, and he gets hurt. Oh, forget. You're toast.
That's it.
That's it.
You're out.
Good night.
You're out.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the game is different. And then to now, when I just got done with the first year of AEW, going through the archives, AEW Dynamite, and I just decided to start looking up the careers of the guys over at AEW. Like for instance, I just found out Jon Moxley is Dean Ambrose. I didn't know they were the same person. They really,
oh yeah,
he really does it, especially when that first debut on AEW. And it was just like, he's coming off of a Mercer infection or some shit like that. I was just like, wait, what? Like, is this guy, is it safe to have him in a ring? And then he just goes and just beats Jon Moxley. I was just like, okay, fine. Like, y'all want this guy here? So sure. And then by like the third show, I see Kenny Omega dragging out a fucking barbed wire broom and then tosses John the barbed wire bat. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Like I feel like I'm watching ECW with a WCW filter right now. I'm like, what's, because you got all the characters in the world, but your guys are some fucking psychos. Like understanding that Adam Page ends up going through a transition too, from just the mild mannered, yeah, I'm just here to have a drink and wrestle, to like, y'all really brought an animal out of me. It's a great journey. And then finding out about the Bullet Club. So around the time when I started stand-up comedy is when the Bullet Club was hot, because this is when I was going into Hot Topic to get all of the, you know, because by this time, 2014, 2015, that's when they were like on fire. Yeah. This is when Hot Topic got around to us for nostalgia. So like, we got all of the comic book t-shirts, the Nickelodeon, the Cartoon Network, like, characters licensed. And that was one shirt that always stood out where I'm like, this doesn't fit with Hot Topic. Like, with anything here, like a shirt that says Bullet, no, with Bullet Club. Like, this is when Hot Topic still had ICP merch in the store. Like Bullet Club did not, like, mix well with it. I'm with a stand-up comedian. I'm like, do you know what that is? He was like, that's just some wrestling stuff. He was just like he just casually mentions the Young Bucks. So I'm just thinking like, okay, that's just something that the Young Bucks are just on. Fast forward 10 years. And I'm finding out Bullet Club was just foreigners terrorizing Japanese pro wrestling. Just young 20-something-year-old foreigners. First, I thought Kenny Omega was Japanese, just off of his bravado and persona that he gives. I'm like, I've watched enough Japanese media to see this. I'm like, he kind of looked like he Japanese, and it's like, nah, he Canadian. I'm like, he had to have been in Japan then.
Well, that's his claim. He claims that his whole thing is he's an anime character. That's his whole gimmick.
His old logo that he used to have before the whole heel change, I was like, well, that's kind of hard, but that explains it now, because that is very anime like. What was his tag team? The Golden Lovers.
Yes.
So I got my quick little history of that from the YouTube channel. But learning about the Bullet Club, always knowing about Finn Balor, but like seeing him on WWE now. So like up until this point, watching Raw, seeing Finn Balor's role, and I'm like, I know this guy. I definitely know he had a persona that he would switch in and out of, that animal demon persona. He was like the Beast or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, how come they're not using him in WWE for like something bigger other than just a part of this clique? It's like, I'm feeling more from him. And then to find out that this motherfucker started the Bullet Club. Like, he's the guy. Prince Devitt, a.k.a. Finn Balor, Mr. Rock and Roller. Like it is. I'm like, all right, I'm back. I'm back in wrestling. Like, I'm back. After those like 3-4 videos, it explained everything. The John Cena is about to retire. Jey Uso is one of the most hyped up. Call him overhyped, whatever you want. It's entertaining. The minute you hear the song drop, you like, who gonna get to do it with Jey in the crowd?
Oh yeah.
Is he going to say run it back? Like, all of that. All of the women that talk cash shit now. Like, it's a brand new ball game. I'm back in it. And it's slowly consuming me, man. I went to a match.
Yeah.
I went to a match recently. And as you were saying before, how so many people are getting involved with wrestling now. this rapper named Westside Gunn. Are you familiar with him?
I am not. Not heard of that.
So he's quote unquote underground, but he's been on the internet, releasing music, working with big name artists, and he's always made sure to incorporate his love for professional wrestling in his music, and which that almost always was, besides like the usual like wrestling reference, like he would name a whole track after a wrestler.
Fuck yes.
And that's so beautiful. So from there it's like, all right, the album artwork, it'll be like something altered, like wrestling, like one of his compilations is a picture from like the 70s or 80s. I think it's like Hogan and Flair just drenched in blood, but the faces are cut out. So he's definitely that type of wrestling fan. But he recently started his own promotion company called Fourth Rope. And he's been doing these events called Heels Have Eyes. And I went to the ninth one. Yep. Like he is a fan. He is a wrestling fan. So he hyped this one up like big time. He announced like MVP was coming. He fucking announced the Hardy Boys. Yeah, he announced the Hardy Boys was gonna be there. Like it was mad tag team events. Weather ended up fucking all that up. But it ended up still being a pretty good event because it was a very, very good like pivot in a sense of the show must go on, so we got to work with what we got. But then also how the show like opened up. So from the openers to a like, all right, that was actually like not bad. And then he immediately gives us Enzo. Enzo was there.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately gives us Enzo, and it was this ninja guy that was getting hella acrobatic and shit, right? Gives us that.
Wow.
Then he starts giving us the tag team events. I think it was at least like 9 matches.
Shoot.
It was stacked. It was stacked, man. We were there from 6 to 9 o'clock. 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Three hours straight. And I enjoyed every second of it. Every second. I was just like, oh yeah, this is good. Like I'm really back in wrestling. And it helps, like I mentioned before, with the New Japan when Bullet Club took over. It helps incorporating that back into this podcast. And that's just more Japanese media that I already watched. Like anime and Power Rangers. Which,
yeah,
it's a whole thing. Also, too, being a sub-drummer, which is why I asked you your favorite wrestling games. Video games is a huge subcategory. Huge subcategory on here. And wrestling games, I've always stood in a lane of their own, I will say. Like a way,
1,000%.
Away from everything. So, it's kind of just like all working out for me now, in the sense of how I'm interviewing you right now. Where I'm like, damn, I got back into wrestling, and I got to rejuvenate this podcast and everything else that I'm doing. Like I'm incorporating this wrestling energy with Westside Gunn, going to a wrestling like. Event, watching it, processing it as a performer. I legit was getting embarrassed watching wrestlers bomb the first part of their match. I was like, holy shit, I didn't know that could happen for y'all. Like, oh damn. I was like, fuck. Like, cause me, it's like, you just keep talking. But for them, it's like,
yeah.
Nope, we gotta get through this match. We got our set time. And we got to get through this match. And they ended up, they made it fucking work. And I was just like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. You that.
Know, I will say this. I actually, I do fully, I understand. what's ironic is I understand what you're saying, because I will say that I have, one of the things that I've been an incredibly massive fan of and supporter of for many, many years has been stand-up comedy. I have loved stand-up comedy my entire life, literally. Ever since I was a little kid, my dad had like Jerry Seinfeld, Jeff Foxworthy CDs, and that's something that made me love it. And I actually came to a conclusion when I was in college. I think I went to an open mic night once, and I was like, okay, I am not, this is not something I can do. I am not good at this.
I'm dying.
I absolutely love and admire stand-up comedy as a fan. It's one of those things I said, I'm just going to say that I am a fan, a lover, an admirer. And I've always felt that comedy, especially stand-up comedy and pro wrestling, were two things that really should align. Because if you're there, about half of a wrestling locker room is guys who probably could be stand-up comedians if they gave it a shot.
No, the fact that so many wrestlers, well, I can't say so many, the fact that wrestlers can transition into acting, that's an indicator right there in itself. So it's and then also too, the fact that so many stand-up comedians are fucking wrestling nerds. Like,
oh yes.
Nerds. Like, I thought I was a nerd with this anime shit. Nerds were about this shit, man. So,
oh yeah.
So, but I mean, it's like you're going up there in front of God knows how many people from any level. It could go from 3 to, or one night you're just in front of 1,000. You got to put on a show.
Absolutely. That was actually something that happened somewhat recent. I'm trying to remember what. Oh my gosh, what show was it? Oh my God, why am I drawing a blank here? Because I did do a show recently where, when I realized how many people were actually in the crowd, it kind of made me sort of flip out, like, oh my God, I cannot believe how many people have gathered up at this. And what's fucking with me right now is I can't remember where it was. Like, this just happened recently.
Damn.
It's like leaving my brain, but when you do have that moment where you step out and you see like how many people are there, when you realize, when you have that moment of you just happen to end up on a show with 100 plus, I mean, or 500 plus, it's a whole new ball game, and it takes on a whole new meaning when you step out there. It really does.
Definitely, man. Definitely. And definitely receiving that energy from that 100, 500 plus, or even when it's just 3 people in a room. I've had the bad nights where I'm in the last group of an open mic. So I'm like the last 4 comedians. It's 2022 and it's game 2 of the NBA finals. And the stage is off to the side of the bar. So nobody's looking at me. They can hear me though. But nobody, nobody's looking at me. Nobody's looking at me. So you gotta appreciate all of the steps, definitely. All right, let's try to wrap this up with some wrestling talk. Let's talk about your career, and I guess yeah. So where did things really get started for you? Because am I mistaken to say that your career has taken off in the last 2 years? Like you've really made some big steps for yourself?
Well, I definitely think that my bigger steps were definitely these past few years. To be honest, like I said, I started in 2013, and I definitely wasn't making like a big noise to the point that it was – out there quite as much as it is now. It was wrestling was still kind of in a weird period of time, but I was really making some big connections and meeting a lot of people between the years of 2013, 2018. That's where I was really kind of finding my sea legs, learning about who I was, what I wanted to be. Because like you actually said it very early on, you're going to go through so many transitions and so many ways of going about things. If you are doing the same character 13 years later that you did when you first started, something's wrong. Unless you just happen to get it really, really, really over. I mean, good for you, but that's not very likely that's going to happen. I did start off as kind of just the generic guy with some gear that I bought online from a cheap store. Evolved into a few different things that were decent, you know, but nothing that really exploded. I think that my career really, I think things really started to take a turn when one day a friend of mine came up and said, "Hey man, I've got this chair in the back of my car with free hugs written on it. I can't do anything with it. Do you think you could use it?" I was like, "Hand it over." I said, I'll make something happen with this. And I started running the free hugs gimmick back in, I want to say probably like 2016, 2017. And that really started to make some noise. I started getting looked at by places in other states. A few different indie companies were like, "Yeah, we want to bring you in, see how this works." And I think the peak of my career was when I was tagging with my former partner, one of my closest friends, a gentleman named Lazarus Black. We were the Black Society that ran for 5 years. Tagged together for 5 years around the Carolinas. Had a lot of great matches, good footage. Not a huge amount of accolades to speak of, but we really made a name for ourselves in the tag team division. Lazarus wanted to get really involved in the deathmatch circuit. That was their thing. They loved deathmatch and blood and violence. So when we kind of went our separate ways, that's where they went, and I just stayed a jack of all trades. But I honestly think that was probably where things really changed up, was when we split off and stopped being the tag team and started doing our own singles run. That's when I had a lot of people saying, "Hey, I want to get you more involved in some storylines." Had people saying they wanted my input and consultation on certain wrestling events. My entire goal has been to, as I said, I want to be a student of this industry. I want to learn everything there is. I basically want to be like the Avatar. I want to know about airbending, firebending, earthbending, give it all to me. I want to be able to do everything. If you put me in the ring and say, "Hey, give me a blood-filled death match," I can do it. If you want me to get in there and get crushed in 2 minutes by a guy who's 7 feet tall, I can do it. If you want me to go in there and tell this back and forth storyline with two guys that are duking it out for 20 minutes straight and it ends in a stalemate, I can do that. My goal is to, I want to be somebody who can venture into any single solitary territory that there is to offer. And I do think that in the past couple years, I've seen a lot of chess pieces moving. There's been a lot of putting plans into place, making plans, and now, I know a lot of people say this, but I truly believe that the end of this year and the beginning of 2026 is when there is going to be some major, major movements from the end of Ryan Mantis, because I've already got five promotions that are talking about bringing me in at the beginning of 2026, places in North Carolina, places in Tennessee, and even one place in Alabama. So I'm really hoping that this is going to be a pivotal point and that my career is going to start really seeing some uplifts and some new opportunities come about. And I dare say that if anybody is following what I'm doing locally right now, I strongly suggest you keep your eyes open and keep them sharply focused, because I have a very big feeling that there's a very big change coming here in Boiling Springs, South Carolina, at Explosive Pro Wrestling. The deranged behemoth, the rogue heathen, is a force to be reckoned with. Key word, reckoned. There is one group that calls themselves The Reckoning here in Boiling Springs. Well, I'll go ahead and I'll say it right here on this podcast. Let it get out there to the whole world. Spread it everywhere, far and wide. There is only one reckoning that is coming in Boiling Springs, South Carolina. And it is not from The Reckoning. It's not from the big, bad brother Silas, who thinks that he can walk in and step in and just control everything like a little puppet master. No. Mantis is not a puppet. Never has been, never will be. So the next time you try to come in and put strings on me, Silas, the only thing that is going to happen is the one thing that always happens when you try to put a chain on a pissed off dog. You're gonna get bit. And that's all I have to say about that.
Off the top of the dome. Once I see you leaning into it, I was just like, this motherfucker cutting a promo. I saw the face change, and you were just like, anybody following locally, better start paying attention now. And I was just like, oh, shit.
the reality is that Brother Silas, he thinks that Ryan Mantis is a gun for hire, which technically I am, but that's only if I like you. And the fact is, I don't like authoritarianism. I don't like totalitarians. I don't like dictators. 8647. But all I'm saying is, Brother Silas wants to tell me that I'm going to be punished for not showing up last week because he wanted to call me in and tell me that I need to fight somebody for him, for the Reckoning. I don't owe the Reckoning shit. So he wants to come in and tell me that I owe him. EPW is my stomping ground. And if he thinks that he's going to get one of his little cronies, this little gothic, gobbledygooker, wannabe Edgar Allan Poe, who looks like the fighting Irish leprechaun trying to be Edgar Allan Poe, he's going to come in and teach me a lesson? Oh, you're about to get a lesson in the definition of insanity. Did I ever tell you the definition of insanity? Probably. But you'll learn again.
Cut his mic off. Cut his mic off. My God, that man is on fire.
Well, hopefully in about 20 minutes.
See what I'm saying? Just that right there. I've been trying to figure out, like, okay, how do I capture that now on stage? Because honestly, from a stand-up's perspective, when I first started stand-up comedy, I had a somewhat critical thinking brain. And the task I gave myself when I decided to take it seriously was that I got to figure out how to be myself on stage. Like, how do I be my truest self, but on stage making people laugh? Mm-hmm. Somehow, I semi found that out in New York. But what changes is just like, okay, maybe just me. I'm not feeling that. We gotta switch it up. And then you go to wrestling, especially now with Cena on his farewell tour. To start out with, like, I'm gonna put on a show for my fans. to a heel turn, to a summer long heel turn, and then back to babyface to close it out.
Yeah.
Should be studied, man.
Absolutely, it should.
Should be studied.
Absolutely.
So I'm definitely doing that. Hey, look, man, I'm not going to ask too much more of your time. You sat here and cut two promos. We chopped it up, got nostalgic. You put me on to your growth in wrestling, how you came up on it. The fact that you even dabbled in to the world of stand-up comedy, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny right there. So I'll say this to keep it on brand with the anime. Let me see if I can put you on something. Let me see. Can I add a video? Let's see. Change. I can't. Maybe share the screen. So I'm gonna share the screen. I'm gonna show you some anime. So there. Okay. Do you remember Ultimate Muscle?
That sounds very familiar.
It was a wrestling anime. It was a wrestling anime made popular in the 70s and 80s, so like the silver age of professional wrestling. It's a very, very wacky, goofy show. Very, very, very wacky, goofy show. And they recently had a anniversary season come out. So it got revamped, and it's gorgeous. Again,
that's all something I would love.
Like another factor that got me back into wrestling. Let's see. Yeah, let's do this one. Let's see. First of all, turn this shit down because this is loud as hell.
Yeah.
So this is something that I also do. Why I had to take it back to
okay,
to keeping it simple for myself when it comes to this world of entertainment and content creation. So I got so far deep into this podcast game that I learned how to make anime music videos.
Hell yes, AMVs, love it.
Uh-huh. So you already know what I'm talking about. You already know how this works.
Oh yeah.
So let's just store it up. So let's see. And then can you see it?
I could see it, yeah. Okay, here we go. Oh wow!
Can you hear it?
Oh, man, yeah. Music makes me think of Boondocks a little bit. Oh wow! Wow.
Is like,
it's so over the top. But
when I tell you I lost my mind watching it, it's the two seasons are out on Netflix right now. It's called Kaneko Man Perfect Origin Arc. I've been recommending it to everybody. I'm like, if you like showing an anime in the slightest, or if you're a wrestling fan in the slightest, like just check it out and let me know if you like it or not. Cause I fucking fell in love with it. I just fell in
love. Well, that, yeah.
Yeah. But it's again, Spencer, Ryan, thank you for your time, man. I'm not gonna hold you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm not gonna hold you up anymore. We're definitely gonna keep in touch, man. Cause this wrestling shit, man, it's pushed me even more to my goals now.
That's fantastic, man. I love that.
I'd love
to hear that.
Cause of course, ultimately, I want something big to happen with stand up, but that's really up to the people. It's really up to you and really up to the people to get yourself on that pedestal. But with this podcast, with all the people that I've met, the spaces I've gotten into, and then to now understand the fascination and the admiration that specifically groups of Japanese people have for African Americans here in the United States, and us equally, of course, not just African Americans, but us equally having mutual interests in their media. I gotta get over it.
The effects that wrestling and honestly, Darius, yeah, I agree, Japanese media and entertainment. The effect that it has had on racial issues, the progress that we've seen racially for black men and black women in wrestling has been phenomenal, because there absolutely has been a history of low representation. Misrepresentation. One of the things that still gets me to this day, that I still think about all the time, is how I think about one of the best superstars of all time, Booker T, how he was set to be one of the next greatest champions, and all of a sudden out of nowhere he's just gone and out of the race, just gets squashed by Triple H. There was a lot of say and speculation from African-American superstars from back in the day that said, yes, that racism absolutely did play a role in certain areas, as it does in almost everything in the world, and to some degree or another, especially in America. So yes, to say that wrestling has had a major effect on a lot of those, a lot of social issues and a lot of contemporary issues we see, I don't think there's anything incorrect about that whatsoever. I think it with racial issues and gender issues with women and with the LGBTQ community, gay people, African American people, Latino people, women have found pretty amazing opportunities utilizing wrestling as a platform. And yet another reason why I say it's one of the most beautiful performance arts in the entire world, if not the greatest.
It's definitely up there, because it's hard for I'll speak for our country. It's hard for anybody in America to say they don't know what wrestling is, or they've never seen wrestling.
Oh, amen.
It's really hard. It's really, I ain't gonna say it's impossible, but it's really hard to meet anybody at almost any age and ask them, do you know what wrestling is? So
absolutely.
So yeah, absolutely. But man, let them know where they can find you at, any dates you got coming up. I'm gonna go ahead and just drop this on Tuesday.
Okay. Well, obviously, it's been absolutely amazing to be on here. Thanks so much for having me. It's been a privilege to talk to you, see you, catch up with you. It's been such a long time. I will say is that the Rogue Heathen is going to be traveling, like I said, a lot in the beginning of 2026. Right now, you can come out and see me every single Friday night in Boiling Springs, South Carolina, at Explosive Pro Wrestling. 122 Builders Court, Boiling Springs, South Carolina. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You can find my profile on both of those platforms as well. I got videos for days, got posts for days. I can answer any questions you have, anything you want to know, anything you want to talk about. I am right here. But you are going to see the Blackbird of Midgard flying all across the plains and landing in places like North Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, everywhere across the board, bringing glory to all of Asgard and bringing glory to my Viking ancestors, and most of all, making a stomping ground into every single ring I step into. And I'm always going to fight endlessly and relentlessly. Get that fear through your head.
Ryan Mantis, ladies and gentlemen, Gerard Fortune, this man Negro Jump. You have a good rest of your day.